Well, welcome everyone. Welcome back to Asian Dudes Talking. I heard you have Derek and Andrew. Our topic today is
the English language, learning it, using it, and how it compares to, you know, our time spending speaking in Chinese and its intricacies and things like that. So.
Okay, so let's start off, right? Well, we're English is our second language. So obviously when I first came to the US, I didn't speak any English at all. Really started from the basic, like the letters A, B, C, D.
That's really basic.
Yes. and this is when I was in third grade. So it is very challenging. I think if I had to think back, one of the most challenging things is probably the embarrassment factor. So the first school that I attended, elementary school, were, you know, 95% are Caucasian. And basically nobody understood me. And I think I mentioned this before, where, you know, I'm the first student in the first ESL class. And then like a couple of weeks later, they brought in another student. So it's an interesting experience, but there is a bit of, at least for me personally, there is a bit of an embarrassment factor, because every time I try to say something, the reaction that we get, huh? That you know, I don't know what you're talking about, and that, you know, there's no sympathetic view from the other side. Just like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
So that's a big factor for me. But ultimately, just do a lot of, so like, I guess when you're a kid, it's easier. When you grow older, when you're a teenager, or when, you know, some folks come here when they're in the college years,
that's going to be a lot harder.
Yes, yes, definitely. And a lot of it is practicing. So the younger you are, the more likely you want to practice. As you get older, you tend, you know, at least for me personally, you tend to...
I mean, that's definitely true. In fact, it's kind of interesting. In order to get us to practice, I remember when we first came at home, we still spoke Chinese, basically Cantonese. And my dad, one day, while he was listening to my brothers and I, were like chatting away in Cantonese about, I don't even remember what. In order to get us to start using more English, he forbid us to use the word baba and mama. He instead...
Your dad?
Yeah, my dad. And he forced us to switch and say, from now on, you have to call us by daddy and mommy. Which at first, it seemed really weird. And we were always like kind of fall back on the Chinese way, but we kept doing it anyway. And now it's kind of interesting. It's like maybe 10 years ago, once we all spoke English, and that's all we ever spoke at home anymore, between my brothers anyway, he wanted us to switch back. But it was too late. We couldn't get used to it.
Right.
So, you know, it's a matter of immersion, right? The more you speak it, the easier it gets, and the more you're able to learn it. And if you don't get it, if you don't force yourself to speak it, then it goes away. And I think that's actually part of a problem I'm having now with Chinese, where if you don't speak it, you lose it.
Right.
And now I find my Chinese is so bad, whenever I speak in Chinese now, I sound like an idiot, because, you know, I'm stopping and thinking about the words.
Right. Now, so do you make your nephew and nieces speak Chinese?
The interesting thing is two of my brothers are married, right? So brother number three, his wife actually is a new immigrant from Taiwan. So she mainly speaks Mandarin to my nephews.
Right.
So right now, my two nephews on that side, they're fluent in Mandarin and fluent in English.
Right.
So,
which is great,
which is actually perfect. You know, I'm glad for that. Except brother number four, he and his wife came here. You know, when we came, he was really, really young. He started even before kindergarten. So he only speaks English. His Chinese is almost non-existent. So his kids, niece and nephew, two kids as well, speaks only English. They can't speak Chinese. I mean, my my mom, you know, their grandmother takes care of them every once in a while, and she speaks to them in Chinese. So they're able to respond to her in every once in a while, but they always fall back onto English. So like they've almost completely lost the ability to speak Chinese.
See, that's interesting. So there's an interesting point here, I think. I think there's two schools of thoughts. One, you have parents that are really gung-ho on that. I want my kids to speak their native tongue, and they force their kids to speak their native tongue at home, like when you were young. Well, actually, your parents actually did the reverse.
Well, they try to anyway.
Right. So, you know, as a parent myself, right? So I did go through a dilemma where, you know, should I force my kid to speak Chinese at home where I speak the language and have them retain it, or just speak English. Ultimately, we end up just speaking English because it's so much easier.
Right.
It's easier to discipline them, get an idea across. And part of it is me too, right? Because I think the more I speak, the more they can learn.
Yeah. And there is two sides of that. Because I noticed it with one of my nephews. When he was born, we tried to all speak Chinese so that he will retain the language. The problem was when he then started to attend school, like preschool or kindergarten.
They switch.
They not only switch, but all his friends then were speaking English. And at the time, since we were trying to force Chinese on him, his English wasn't all that great. So he kind of felt left out. Of that.
Yep, absolutely. Right?
So on the one hand, we want him to retain the language. But on the other, I don't want him to be left out of the group because that's kind of devastating in itself.
Right.
So eventually we kind of gave up and his mom still speaks Chinese. But all of us, you know, whenever he speaks to me, it's straight English.
Yep. That's so same thing with us as well, where we initially try and very soon because we put our kids through daycare at age 2, so they started to interact with other kids in English at the daycare. It was pretty soon that we noticed that there are certain kids that come in only, even though they're born in the U.S., they only speak their mother tongue, whether it's Arabic, Spanish, or Chinese. They don't speak a single word English, and we see those kids like get left out,
right.
And we felt bad, and that's exactly what we did. We just like, okay, let's just go with English, which brings the point. So I now having made that decision, I don't know, just maybe to make myself feel better, but I think it's the right decision, and the reason why is that unless things change. I think for the foreseeable future, you know, I would expect my kids to grow up in this environment where you speak English, and speaking English is important. You know, to no matter what you do, being able to use a language to express yourself, to convey a point, in a very effective manner is very important.
Yeah, because when we started working, I even noticed people I've worked with, colleagues who are good at the job, but because they didn't have a handle on the language, they get passed over or ignored pretty often. I mean, because you don't have that ability to kind of, like you said, to convey exactly what your thoughts are, and everybody kind of just bypasses that. So it's, you know, in the long term, I think it is ideal for them to speak the language right away and pick it up and continue using it. But I think a lot of parents also think, it's also important to hold on to that, hold on to your mother tongue, which a lot of parents I've known, even some of my wife's sisters, force their kids to go to Chinese school.
I do too. Right? I don't know how effective that is, but I do too.
I actually think it's not effective at all. But
I don't disagree.
It just seems like it's the only option, right? To send them to Chinese school on weekends so they can study Chinese and still retain it and remember it. But to be honest, I went to Chinese school for a few years, and I didn't retain any of it, sad to say. I don't think it's very effective, but it is a good idea to keep the language going so that it still be used and still remembered.
Definitely. I mean, especially in this type of culture, you wanna, you wanna be able to communicate with different culture, in the native tongue, and it gives you an advantage. in the next world.
And you know, business and everything else is so international now. I mean, European countries, you know, they most people there speak like 3-4 languages.
Yeah, yeah, it's very common for anybody coming from Europe to speak 2 or 3. Yeah,
exactly. So,
I mean, be surprised people don't speak more than 2 languages.
Yeah, here in the U.S. it's kind of different. I think maybe because we don't border so many countries, and even the borders we do have, Canada and Mexico, there's really no need to speak any other language because, you know, Canada has English as well.
Right.
And you're not going to do much. Most people in Mexico who do business with U.S. speaks English anyway, so it makes it easier to be lazy about it and not learn it. But it's definitely useful.
Right.
So let me ask you a question then. How did you work to improve it, knowing that it's so important and knowing it's you know, something to start with?
I mean, wanting to do something and actually doing something is two different things. So just to make it clear. So I do want to improve my English many times. It is not until I started working, maybe I would say like 2 years into my career, where I realized, you know, English is important. Not only necessarily speaking the language, right, but writing it, you know, it's so important. So, but then I didn't realize, to a certain extent, I actually did not realize that English being able to master English is that important, right? Growing up, we're taught that math is important, science, you know.
Right.
English is just like, okay, you use it to communicate, but I think in reality,
I think it's the most important subject.
Right, I agree. I would argue that mastering a main language, whether it's English, whatever main language you're using, is more important than mastering science and math. For the reason that you mentioned earlier, where look, you could be the smartest guy in the world, if you can't tell other people or explain your idea to other people in layman's terms, forget about it.
Right. Nobody's going to pick up on it.
Right.
Nobody's going to listen to it.
Right. And so, and part of mastering a language, I learned, is, you know, is not just like write and learn all the vocabulary, but be able to really use English to translate for people from a very technical idea, translate into a layman's term. That's my understanding of English.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually, it's interesting you should say that, because literally my entire career is in this very niche field, right? It's legal technology. And my whole career is not so much that I know law or know technology, but know enough to be able to kind of bridge that communication gap between lawyers and between IT personnel.
Right.
And that's how I've been making a living this entire time. So the command of the language was actually much more important. And I have to assume that's gonna be true for almost any role you take on, right? Whether you're a project manager, whether you work in finance or whatnot, it's really just a matter of taking information you glean from one group of people and passing it on to another. And that's, you know, without the language of without understanding the language enough or having enough mastery of it, you're not going to be able to do that.
Right, absolutely. And going back to, you know, so I realized the importance of English, and as I was working, just like, you know, I find that people that has the ability to really articulate themselves, you know, very easily, you know, be able to like communicate well, tend to move up the ladder a lot quicker.
Right.
So you know, obviously there's no, you know, I don't know if there's any program that will allow, I'm sure when I look into it, there might be. But for me, you know, it's just really trial and error and being able to sit down, listen to those people, you know, write a lot, write a lot of memos and, you know, make a lot of grammar mistake, you know, and just so I learn from it. I might still write horrible. I still have a lot of grammar mistake, but I would say I'm probably better than I am 10 years ago. And I'm probably a little bit better in communicating than I'm 10 years ago. But in, you know, actually at first step, I don't think I went out my way to do it. It's just more of a learning process.
Yeah, so. I think what helped me the most was reading, and a lot of reading. And it didn't really matter what I was reading. It was just, you know, if you enjoyed novels or magazines or whatever it is, you just read a lot of it. Because I know my grammar stinks. Like, I don't know any of the grammatical rules I'm supposed to follow. I never really studied it, never really paid attention to it. And I know I made mistakes as I was growing up. But I think what was helpful was I was reading so much during my earlier years that whenever I write out a sentence or hear a sentence in English, it always either sounds correct. Yeah, it either sounds correct or it doesn't. Because based on everything I've read, I'll think, wait, I've never heard anybody put it in this way. So if it didn't sound correct, then I just, you know, assume it's wrong.
Right.
If it sounds correct based on what I've read before and I've seen the same kind of structure before when I'm reading, then yeah, I'm going to assume it's correct, right?
So I guess for our listeners out there, if you want to be better in English, read a lot.
Well, yeah, I think read a lot helps, mainly because not only does it give you at least a template to compare to as to what's correct and what's not, because all those grammatical rules are so difficult to memorize anyway, and they change based on circumstances. There's no way to really learn it, at least for me. And the other thing is, the more you read, the more words you know. And I think one of the key methods to be able to convey or describe an idea articulately is to have enough vocabulary to describe it, right? Instead of always saying something along the lines of, oh, something is very good or very okay, or right. Always using the word very, there are other words that stand in for that.
You know? Well, see, so one of the things that I learned, and people might be surprised, actually in business, there's quite a bit of writing. One of the things that I do learn is that, yes, you need to master the vocabulary, but you need to master a specific word, its meaning, its true meaning, and you can actually apply that word, whether it's, you know, metaphorically, on a certain situation, right? You know, for example, I'll give you an example. When we're talking about something that has a very tight timeline, right? We'll say, well, this transaction has a short feel, right? You know, that automatically gives, you know, that image, right? You have a short feel, you know, bomb's gonna blow up, you know, the fuel is lead, you know, it's burning as you speak. So it gives people a sense of urgency. So you apply that metaphor into a transaction that's very time sensitive. You know, people get it. So, you know, stuff like that, you know, you be able to mastering a language is that's the way I see you mastering language.
Yeah, actually, along that same line, it's interesting. You can actually tell who's a better speaker or who is very comfortable with the language by the way they play around with the words and the rules, right? I noticed this in high school when we were in English classes. The English teachers who were very strict with their teaching, like they'll pronounce words exactly as they're supposed to, or they follow the rules and don't make any changes, I tend to see those teachers as like know enough to teach, but really not a mastery of the language.
Yep.
The teacher that I remember the most,
I think I know who you're talking about.
You know who I'm talking about. He loves to play around with the words. Whenever he gives exams, right, and he's counting off numbers, instead of saying 1, 2, 3, like most other teachers would say, he'll actually just go 1, 2, 3, because it's the most easily mistaken sound that most students make when they're counting, right? Three with that lack of the TH sound. So I notice he plays a lot with like words and sounds. And that to me is like a clue that, you know, he's really masterful. So he's willing to play around with it. If you're uncomfortable, you always stick to the rules. But when you're comfortable with it, then you can make up your own rules and play around.
Yeah.
And I found that very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So now talking about mastering language, what sort of, you know, experience have you, you know, maybe a funny, because I do, because when you're talking about messing up a word, actually, we cause an experience.
Oh, so many.
What are some of the most, not most embarrassing, but one of some embarrassing moment that you went through while learning the English?
Two of them that I can think of right off the bat, because those things, even when I'm like sleeping late at night and coming back to all my embarrassing things I've done in my life, they always come up. The first one was in I think this was like in fifth or maybe sixth grade. We went on a camping trip.
Wait, this is at Gates?
Yes.
I don't recall going on a camping trip.
Oh, we went to a lot of camping trips.
With the school?
With the school, yeah.
I got shafted there.
Maybe you did, because we went to a lot.
I honestly don't remember these trips.
We had a free trip to Disneyland too.
I really don't remember these trips. I feel like that, you know, maybe we didn't sign up, or because it cost some money.
And or maybe it was just the wrong class. I remember it was...
Or maybe it's just for the smart kids.
Maybe that's why. See, you should have worked harder than
I know, I
had
should
a free,
have.
Free camping trips.
I should have.
But it was a fun trip. Anyway, during one of the trips, we were in these tents and the bathrooms were like somewhere else, right? Because where we were in tents. Anyway, one of the time I remember I asked the one of the counselors at the camp, I needed to go to the restroom. But what I said was, I need to go to the west room. And he then made a joke about, why the west room? Why don't you want to go to the east room instead? And at the time, I didn't know that I was saying it wrong. I assumed, you know, the restroom and west room were exactly the same thing.
Well, it could also mean, because, like, you know, among Asians, like, when you... You know, when we talk, you pick up a language from your social group, as you go.
Right.
A lot of people say restroom, restroom, restroom.
Right. So
right.
I didn't realize, I didn't even know it was a mistake. I thought that's just a joke everybody made. And that's the problem, because I assume it's just a joke everybody made because it sounds so similar. When one of the other kids, because this camping trip was a mixture of multiple schools, right? So the people who were staying with me in the same tent were not actually from Gates. They were from other elementary schools.
Right.
So every time one of the other kids said they wanted to go to the restroom, I immediately shouted out, why do you want to go to the east room? Huh. But they would all look at me like, what the heck are you talking about? So that was, it wasn't until much later after the trip that I don't remember who told me or who took me aside and explained.
So when you yell out, why not go to the east room? What were you thinking? Were you thinking that,
I was thinking it's a joke, right? Everybody says restroom. It's, you know, a directional room, and why don't you just go to the east room, like the counselor said to me. I didn't realize that I was saying it wrong. Because to me, when I heard it, it sounded exactly the same.
That is embarrassing.
It sounded exactly the same. So I thought, oh, okay, maybe that's a joke I just don't get, and here's the joke, right?
Right.
But yeah, that was embarrassing. A second story, like I said, the second one that always comes up. That was worst, not worst in what it is, but it, anyway, at this time, the second story is, I was already working. This is after college. I was working in a law firm. And I had we were working on a case, and I was in a meeting with attorneys on this case. And I kept saying the subsequent point of, you know, I was going through some sort of list of items that we were supposed to be working on, and I kept using the word, you know, the word was supposed to be subsequent.
Right.
Subsequently, we do this, subsequently, blah, blah, blah. But I kept saying subsequent over and over and over again. And everybody kind of like, I could see from the looks I was getting in the room that they were like, you know,
Initially, they were probably thinking you're making a joke. And
yeah,
then
exactly. But then, since I had to keep saying it, because it was all outlines, and I had to keep saying it, they then realized I couldn't say it. It was after the meeting, one of the attorneys that I worked really close with pulled me aside and told me it was pronounced subsequent. And I remember thinking, holy crap.
That's
not something you want to do, especially in a room full of attorneys and anyway.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean, especially in the presence of a group of professional.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to make sure you portray yourself professionally, or at least not professionally, that's a wrong term, adequately, right?
Right, right.
So that's definitely not a situation where it does that. So I don't feel so bad, because my experience, I do recall, and I still remember very real even in today, that experience. And looking back at it, you know, listening to your example, it's actually not that bad. So here's the embarrassment that I remember was, and I forgot, probably also definitely in elementary, probably fourth, fifth grade. So on the weekends, my parents sent us to church, just so we can meet friends and that sort of stuff. And you know, so it's free daycare, right? they're thinking. So when we were, you know, during church time, we would play with other kids. One of the you know, the kids that I used to play with very closely, I still remember his name, even though I haven't talked to him for 30 years, just because at that moment was really embarrassing. So we were playing, and we always say that, oh, you know, we were pretending, we would like choking each other, and we say, oh, you're killing me, you're killing me. At that time, I have no idea what the word killing mean, right? So you know, I observe it, and one day, also in church, and what happened in church is that, like you would do small groups of 20, maybe that's too much, probably 10 people, and you would talk about stuff, right? And I remember one of the discussion we had was in a small group of probably 10 people, and then there's the instructor in front talking about something. And then there was an incident happened where I think it was some confrontation where the other kid hit me, I'm pretty sure the other kid hit me. And then we were trying to defend ourselves. The instructor came basically in front of everybody, you know, what happened. And then obviously the other kid is able to explain himself. And then I was so upset, you know, because I feel like I was being bullied and was frustrated. And I was like, and I stood up and I would yell, he killed me. And then everybody looked at me and started laughing. And then I have no clue why people, I thought the word kill is really like hurting or hitting me.
Right.
And because at that time, even though that church was in Chinatown, that group that I was in speak English. And the reason why my parents wanted to send me to church is that I could learn English. So it was really embarrassing because all the other kids were laughing. The instructor were laughing. You know, because I think they know what I'm trying to say,
right,
but I can't say it. And they started laughing. And then to so loud that, you know, I think the priest or the, what do we call church people? Is it a priest? Yeah.
Priest. Clergy.
Came in and basically tried to settle everybody down. And my face was red. Like, I was like, because I have no clue. I know what's embarrassing because I know they're laughing at me.
Yeah.
I have no idea why they're laughing at me. And it was afterwards told me that, well, the word kill is actually mean, you know, killing someone.
Yeah.
And instead of hurting you or hitting you. So it was, you know, that moment, it sort of like pushed me back. And so I become less reluctant to like speak out loud.
Using
words that I don't know.
That's the fear, right? If especially kids that young, if you already don't know the language, I mean, it's tough enough just to speak up for yourself, but when you don't add on the fact that you don't know the language and not sure how you wanna, you know, convey what you're actually feeling or want to do, it makes it doubly hard, I think, and it may, you know, may cause most kids who just arrive to speak less, to just step back and just ignore the whole issue, just so they don't have to try to speak in the language.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true, and also, I mean, so the other interesting that I know about language and speaking language, I'm actually surprised, and then I realized this in college, that I noticed that some folks that actually were born in the U.S. grew up in a very immigration community,
right,
where they speak their native tongue, and they gone through school, and they're in college, and they have a heavy accent worse than mine, and their English is worse than mine.
Yeah.
There's people that are in there, that.
There's quite a few people like that, mainly because, again, if you don't use it, it doesn't improve, and it doesn't stick.
Mm-hmm.
So if you surround yourself with people who are always speaking in, you know, whatever language you're most comfortable with at home, either, you know, Spanish, Chinese, or whatever, everything will tend to stay that way. The English just becomes something you bring on when necessary, rather than truly being integrated to your life. So yeah, I'm not surprised. It actually hurts them quite a bit, you know, because they it's also more comfortable because you don't have to venture out and try to do anything new or learn anything new from it because you have the same people who speaks the language already. You don't have to, you know, attempt a whole new language like you would have to force yourself to do. So
yeah, absolutely. So as you think, you know, for Andrew, as for yourself, what you should say, master the English language, is there a certain model? And when I say model, maybe certain somebody that you say, oh, I wish my English could be as good as him, or someone that you want, you know, to learn that's to be at, you know.
That's kind of interesting. I think one of the reasons I read more was to get back at my cousins, or not really cousins, but like distant relatives. Because when I first immigrated here, I had a lot of you know, relatives I've never even known about that were already living here.
Are they like distant relative or relative?
No, real? They're pretty distant. I mean, they're, I think I'm not even sure how they're related. Probably through my great grandfather or something. But in any case, when we came, the older ones were great. Were always, you know, looked out for us and made sure we were okay and taught us things. But the younger kids, who were about the same age as me that I had to hang out with,
right,
were really mean. And they always would make fun of me whenever I didn't understand what they were saying, or what they were trying to talk about, or any subject matter, because they grew up here. They were born right here. So I think one of the things I did, in fact, now that I think about it, see, this is all dredging up all these old memories, but now that I think about it...
Hopefully it's not something that will haunt you.
No. But now that I think about it, I remember specifically this time where I was visiting them, because we were here so new, we had no clue what's going on. The only people we knew was them, and we had to go to them during weekends and learn from them. My parents always pushed us to go and visit them and learn English from the other, playing with the other kids or whatnot. I remember one of the girls had a book, 100 Dresses. I remember the title. And she was trying to show me, she herself was actually trying to show me how to read it. And she pointed out a word, I still remember the word, sat, S-A-T.
Right.
And the boys who were kind of just playing around eventually came over and saw I was trying to learn it. And they made fun of me for the fact that I can't even pronounce the word sat. Because, right, you know, to me, I don't even know what the word means at the time. So I got so angry at them, I actually forced myself to start like going to the library and borrowing books, to force myself to learn it and read it and get better at it, just so I can, you know, curse back at them in English.
Right. And be better at them,
and
right?
Be better at them. So that was the goal. That was the main goal.
Right.
When I started to really,
which is the driver, is positive.
It's positive in a way. I've actually don't even talk or see any of them ever since probably after grade school. I don't even see most of them anymore. But yeah, they were the driving force to me wanting to learn. But it took a long time to learn, because it was just so different from Chinese that it did take a long time. In fact, let me tell you a little bit another story.
Yeah.
So one of the ways, when I first joined Gates, one of the things that one of the teacher told me is I would learn faster if I learned how to use the dictionary, so that I can look up new words I didn't understand.
And there's pronunciation on this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I thought, oh yeah, that's a good idea. The problem, and I don't know how I ended up that this coincidence cost me probably at least a couple of years in the ability to learn the English language. This teacher assigned another student to show me how to use the dictionary. The issue was, the student gave me an example of how to look up a word. I've forgotten what the word is, but I think it started with the letter C. And he showed me, you look at the first letter of the word,
yep,
which is the letter C, and he would flip, open the dictionary to the C category, and then by coincidence, that word we were looking at was at the very first page of that letter C page, first or second word. And then he said, there's the word. And it tells you exactly what it is and the definition and the sentence example. And it's like, and you can learn more words that way. And I thought, wow, that's so easy and so great. That's incredible. So I started doing it myself, and I look up the word, some other letter, and I flip to that page, and I look at the first page, that word isn't there. It's not okay on the very first page or first, you know. So we never went beyond that, because that word he showed me happened to be on the first page of that new letter. So I couldn't find it.
So that's not technically using a dictionary. You just hit the first page of every word.
Every word, right. I didn't know about alphabetical order and using the next letter. I didn't.
Wait, when is this?
This was in the third grade.
Okay.
So, and because of that, I could never look up the definition of the words. Right? Spelling test, I failed. Every spelling test failed. Like, I never learned anything. All the way for like at least a year or two until like end of probably fourth grade. End of fourth grade, when I somehow through somebody else or somewhere else learned
how to use
the dictionary. And then eventually I thought, oh, okay, now I can go back and learn all these words I was supposed to know already. It was a trying time because of that one coincidence. If that word had been on a separate page somewhere, I would have learned about it.
Did it go to the next letter?
Yeah, but we didn't because it just so happened to be right underneath that big C letter, and then that was it.
Wow!
So it was messed up.
So two things. Surprised to hear that you were like struggling with spelling tests, because as I recall, there's like probably three kids, three or four kids that are so usually top of the class and best everything, and you are one of them, English, math, or so. I'm surprised to hear that. And this is third grade.
This was third grade, and like I said, even in the first half of you know why you're surprised, because I remember you came into the fourth grade class with us during the second half.
No, I came in third grade.
No, I'm pretty sure it's fourth grade, because I know, because I started in third grade.
Oh, you know what? Yes, I started third grade in another school.
Right. So okay. when you joined us, it was the second half of the fourth grade. And by then I had learned how to use the dictionary. Like all throughout third grade and the first half of fourth grade, I was literally failing every spelling test because I could not define anything.
Right. Just a little bit, off tangent a little bit for our listener. I think this is something that very minor thing, right? But folks like my kids would definitely take it for granted because they could come to me and then I could teach them.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So for I would imagine a lot of listeners, maybe potentially immigrant, that, we kind of share these same pain with them. It's just like things that people think, so easy, right?
Right.
But, we don't know. There's for whatever reason, in your say, it was totally by coincidence.
Yeah. So, and the thing is, yeah, like you said, we there was nobody to turn to.
Yeah.
To explain how to do anything. I was the oldest among four of us. So when it was my brother's turn, I taught them how to use the dictionary. But when it was my turn, my parents definitely didn't know.
And, right.
I didn't feel comfortable enough to go up to the teacher who I already claimed, oh yeah, he taught me and I know how to do it. And it was a trying time for a while.
Well, I think it's a good thing, right? I think that at least you realize that, at an early age, because specifically for me personally, my English was bad, but I actually did not realize that until I started working how bad it is. And I don't know, when I look back, I just have no clue how I could escape college, like go to college with my poor English. Because I guess you don't know what you don't know, right? So I go to junior high school, high school, our focus was science, math, and I think we did really well. But when it comes to English, it was just never mentioned to us or never brought up how poorly your English is. So for me, I didn't come to realization until literally when I'm at the workforce and just see how bad my writing is.
Right. Like all of a sudden you realize, crap.
Yeah, shit, what am I trying to write? And even today, if I happen to come across a piece of writing that I did maybe 10 years ago, during college year, I'm just really surprised that I did not fail college. Because seriously, it does not make sense. It's incoherence and I didn't realize that, vocabulary, I'm using the wrong word. I probably pick up the basic stuff, learning use dictionary, but I just don't realize how bad my English is until, you're put in front of someone that, what are you, what, that actually means something. So it's good that you realize that when you're young.
Yeah, that's true. It's I mean that's a way of looking at it, where I realized how poor my language skills were when just in grade school, and I knew I had to improve it.
So okay, now that we know that, I mean, you know, I would say, you know, we master the language, but
we're comfortable enough,
right? Would you be able to say, you know, go out right now and say, hey, look, you know, I'm average or above average in the language?
I used to think I was above average, honestly. I mean, not to sound too arrogant, but I used to think my writing, reading, you know, my English skills overall were above average. And then I don't know what it was, but after a while, after college, and I started working and I started communicating more with people who were born here and in a business sense.
Right. Well, especially with a bunch of lawyers. I mean, some lawyers,
especially with the attorneys,
communicate a point in like two or three sentences. It's so amazing.
Yeah. I think maybe that was why when I started working, because, you know, right off college, my first couple of jobs, real jobs, were in law firms. And every time I read their writing, I was always thinking to myself, holy crap, that would have taken me a whole page to explain. He did it in three sentences and probably explained it even better than I did.
Right.
And I thought, man, my English skills is not up to par, really. So,
it's not fair to compare yourself to attorneys. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but at least I suddenly realized there was a gap.
Right.
And it's not like it's a huge deal, because outside of legal field, if I were to write something else or communicate, I think I was doing fine. But I just suddenly realized there was a higher mountain, I guess,
right,
that I should be climbing towards. So yeah, that was a bit of awakening. And I try to kind of narrow that a bit by learning more words, studying more vocabulary.
So do you still read a lot?
Yeah, well, not as much as I used to, say, 10 years ago. I still read.
But so just be clear, by reading like novel, whatever you get
your hands on, yeah, right? Yeah. I used to read like all the time, whether it's novels or magazine articles, newspapers, like constantly I would be reading. Instead of watching television or whatever, I would be reading.
Yeah.
Now it's more, if I have nothing else to do and there's nothing good on television,
right,
then I go to the reading. And I still read every once in a while too, but definitely not as much as I used to.
Well, reading includes like current event news and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. But I actually don't count that, mainly because it's more, I'm not focused on it. I'm not reading most of the time, current events, news articles, for instance, I don't even read the whole thing. I skim it to get the gist of everything, point of everything, and then I move on. Versus, you know, it used to be when I was reading it, I would actually, I used to keep this little notebook. I really should do it again. I used to keep this little notebook all throughout, you know, high school and college, where if I come upon a sentence or a phrase that I think was really great and really great way to you know, describe things, I would write it down and then try to do variations of things of the same sentence.
Ah, that's a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
Do you still have that book?
I probably still do. It's still multiple versions of it. I used to keep it in pen and paper, then I transfer it to a computer.
Yeah.
But I don't keep it up anymore. But yeah, I used to copy entire paragraphs or just a couple of sentences that I thought, wow, that was really well written.
Yeah.
And I would look back through it every once in a while. So it helped me improve quite a bit. But I'm too lazy now.
Yeah.
Don't do that anymore, but I really should. So yeah, the point being, as I got older and worked more, I began to realize, yeah, I'm good enough.
Right. Now, are you going to try it? I mean, we mentioned about this, you know, process that we're going to do to learn language, try to, you know, be better. Are you, at this point of your career, are you still thinking about, okay,
no,
I still need to be better, I'm just going to stick with what I have?
No, I think at this point, though, it's more the other way, learning Chinese. In that I think my English is good enough in pretty much most scenarios I would catch myself in, whether it's business or anything else, you know, my English is there. What I'm noticing more and more, though, because I don't know why it is, I'm coming up into more and more scenarios where I think I need to know more Chinese, reading and writing. So I'm actually spending more time on that versus my English skills at this point. you know, just to learn more vocabulary, learn the idioms that I used to know and have forgotten, watch more Mandarin television shows.
Is that an excuse to watch it?
No, it's not an excuse, mainly because I actually don't enjoy most of them anymore. Because I don't know how often you watch them, but from my perspective, the shows that are coming out now just are not
very boring.
Yeah, very boring, very, you know, template-like and very
slow.
Yeah, it's just not enjoyable. Right. But I force myself to watch a few of them because I really do want to learn the language. And I actually forced myself to watch, the way I found what was really useful was forcing myself to watch music competitions in Chinese, like, you know, The Voice in Chinese or whatever. Because they'll have the lyrics and then the singing. And some of the songs are catchy enough that I'll remember it. And I was actually able to pick up a few things watching that.
So, now, when you mentioned Chinese, it's Mandarin, right?
Mandarin, yes.
Cantonese.
Yeah, not like Cantonese.
No, I totally think that Chinese Mandarin is a language that's going to be more popular. I mean, it's already very popular, but it's going to be more influential in the future. I mean, I think at the end of the day, still a lot of education material is still in English, which is I think in the future probably so too. But as far as being able to communicate, interact, definitely Chinese is
very necessary. Yeah. In fact, since we're sharing funny stories, let me show you this one funny story that's the reverse.
Yeah.
Instead of the having trouble with English, I was having trouble with the Chinese. But
so you can't do English and you can't do Chinese.
Exactly. I can't do either one of those. My wife and I were visiting Huntington Library.
Yeah.
You know, for those who aren't in the area, Huntington Library is very beautiful. They have gardens everywhere and it's a very popular visit. You could go through a tour of all the gardens. She and I were touring the place and we ran into this woman, a Chinese woman. Yep. She's obviously from Taiwan, most likely. Just by her accent, I assume she's from Taiwan. She came up to us and had a question, right? And my Mandarin is like, you know, I can get a point across, but I sound like an idiot because I need like multiple words to get one single
idea. I can kind of imagine.
Yeah, right. So I was already nervous enough when she asked the question, but her question is so insane. She asked us, so this is what she said. I still remember. She asked, "请问, 分舵在哪里?" And
so she used front door.
Right, but she didn't say front door. She was trying to say front door, but her entire sentence was in Mandarin.
Right.
And she said front door. So I was trying to think, front door. Because my Mandarin is limited, so I thought it was two words I simply didn't know in Mandarin.
Right.
So, you know, I was trying to think what it is, and it's like, and eventually I just gave up and I told her, 对不起, 我不知道 front door 在哪里. It wasn't until we walked away, the two of us were still arguing with each other, what could she be looking for in this garden, in this museum of flowers? Maybe it's a special flower.
Yeah, maybe it's a secret
garden
somewhere.
Yeah, garden or exhibit somewhere. So the two of us were arguing about it. And then eventually we passed the main entrance and we thought, front door! That's what she was looking for, the front door! So yeah, there's a story about my inability to speak in Chinese as well, not just English.
No, I could. I could totally imagine you struggling with Mandarin in that sense, much more than you seeing you struggle in English. That's interesting.
But yeah, no matter what the language is, I mean, if you don't use it, it's gonna take a while to work up to it. I think it's one of the reasons. I think when we were growing up, we speak basically just a butchered version of English or even a butchered version of Chinese most of the time.
Right.
You know, it's some form of Chinglish it's neither language and it's just a combination of the two.
Right. Well, I guess, we've grown, we learn and we, butcher our language. But ultimately, I think it is something that, we should think about as we go through
absolutely
life
absolutely.
And And I think, and I do think that mastering a language is very important, whether it's Chinese or English. Having one as a base and then build upon that is important. So it's for all our listeners out there, whether it's your own language or your own funny story, we would definitely love to hear some of it.
I'm sure everybody's got a funny story that they've got, when they're trying to learn a new language. It doesn't have to be English. Hey, tell us how you learned some other place.
Right.
It'd be hilarious to read some of those.
Right. Okay, so we're running out of time, but hey, thanks for joining us. If you have a funny story, we'd love to hear from you. And until next time, this is Derek and Andrew signing off.
Take care.
Bye.